Welcome to MoneyWeb Now. Business news every morning.
Friday, 14 January. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you loud and live from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, chatting with Viv Govender, Rand Swiss. He's a man who thinks a lot about market. I'm going to ask him one question. What's his big concern for 2022 around markets? I chatted with David Buckham, CEO of Monocle Solutions. They've written a fascinating book, The End of Money. And then I've got some thoughts, some changes coming to SA retail savings bonds that will be significant for the right investor. This show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Morning headlines for Business Day. Another rally from Steinhoff as Pepkor reports success in Europe. Group says 12% growth in revenue, driven primarily by the opening of new stores from the Pepco brand. CNBC, China's December exports, which came out a few hours ago, up 20.9% from a year ago, a little bit ahead of expectations. Morning markets, everything is red. S&P down 1.4%, NASDAQ down 2.6%. In Asia, we've got Sydney off 1%, Tokyo almost 2% down. Commodities, we've got gold, 1,826. Brent, 84.36. Rhodium, same way it was yesterday, 16,740. Rand, 15.42. Top 40 looking for a red open, about 480 points down. What's that, about 0.65%, and that is 10 cent trades down, 2.1% in the Hong Kong lunch break.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Jenny and I with Viv Govender from Rand Swiss. Viv, I mentioned it in the intro there. You're often going down rabbit holes, finding bits and pieces out there. There's lots to look at our markets and think we're going to have a good 2022. And I've chatted with some guests over our first week of being back. My question to you, though, what, if anything, is the big thing out there in the market that is perhaps giving you pause for concern around markets in the year ahead?
It's inflation and how basically central banks are going to handle it. Inflation, as we know, has risen over the last little while. Mm-hmm. We've got the U.S. inflation number coming out yesterday at 7%. That is, you know, well above what their target level is, which is about 2%. And, you know, when these things happen, the Federal Reserve is going to have to react in some way. And historically, those reactions tend to be, you know, not quite perfectly timed and cause, you know, events that you don't want to, you know. People often talk about Volcker and back in the 80s and how he basically broke inflation back then.
Yeah.
But they forget to mention the fact that he also basically destroyed the economy effectively. And you look at the growth rate, you look at unemployment, they both basically had a huge, huge impact because of the rising interest rates. The question we have is, firstly, you know, how is the Fed going to react to this stuff? And secondly, are they going to make a mess of it? You know, and I think that's more likely than not. It's going to be very difficult to time exactly how to raise rates in this environment. It's quite easy to overdo it because you don't really see what you're doing, quite frankly, immediately as it's done because of the, you know, the lag in monetary policy. So I do think that's going to be the number one concern of the year.
And it is a case of, and I take your point on Flocker in the 80s. I mean, last time inflation was this high in the US, 7%, it was 1982. Interest rates in the U.S. were above 15%. He won the inflation war. He didn't win the economic war. And this is that juggling act. Many people are saying that the Fed should already have started raising. If they get behind the curve, then they're going to suddenly, you know, if we don't start to see inflation coming down in the next couple of months, they raise more aggressively. It's a tough juggling act, but it can have significant implications. Not just for this year. This could run. I mean, it took the Reagan administration, you know, the better part of half a decade to sort of get the U.S. economy back and working.
Yeah, well, certainly. And also remember, Volcker took a huge amount of backlash because of it.
Yeah.
Very unpopular at the time. Now, since then, he's become legendary. I mean, because of the actions he took. It's a case of, like, you know, with hindsight, it looks brilliant. But, you know, at the time, people weren't, you know, in favor of it. I mean, do you really think that Powell is as strong a character as Volcker? I think politicians now are strong, you know, in the same kind of way, or strong enough to basically handle a major backlash from the public because of the taken a, in inverted commas, correct decision.
Mm-hmm.
I think that might also be a question to be asked. So I do think we are going to see, a mishandling of these things. It's very likely to happen. And with regards to basically, when they should have acted, the problem is that, until very recently, the Fed was talking about transitory inflation.
Yeah.
The fact of the matter is the last number we got yesterday was the highest of the current cycle, the highest between decades. And it has been rising, over the year. It just shows that, it's very difficult to get an idea of what the number is going to be beforehand, even if you are the Fed. So had they acted and it turned out to be actually transitory or not as important as they thought, it would have been an act of courage, but it also would have been foolish as well, because we don't know for certain what's going to be the actual, print coming out, and they could have been acting incorrectly.
Yeah, and I take your point. Powell doesn't have that political capital which Volcker had back in the day, and especially, it's difficult. To your point, practically impossible to actually do it right, and the implications, of course, are absolutely massive. We'll leave it there. Always appreciate the early morning. Viv Govender, Rand Swiss.
We all have different investment needs. Some of us want to preserve our money for retirement, and others to create wealth for the next generation. At Stanlib, we have a team of investment specialists that can help you achieve any investment goal. So whether your money is looking for more certainty, more return, or more impact through your investments, we have a solution for your investment needs, no matter the time horizon. Join us over the next few months as we provide insights into the solutions we offer to meet your money needs. To find out more, visit stanlib.com or speak to your financial advisor. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. License number 719.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Chatting with David Buckham, he's CEO of Monocle Solutions. The reason I've got David on the line today, they sent me a book towards the end of last year, read it over my holidays, The End of Money, The Great Erosion of Trust in Banking, China's Minsky Moment, and the Fallacy of Cryptocurrency. David, appreciate your time today. Appreciate the copy of the book that you sent me, a good old-fashioned dead tree version. My sense from reading is that, the world is an unhappy and tricky place, and that's not a new or outrageous statement to make. But what you sort of the theme running through the book is that there's a erosion of trust in our financial system, and you very much link that to an erosion of trust in our sort of global liberal democracy system at the same time.
Yes, Simon. Well, first of all, thank you very much for taking the time to read the book, and really appreciate being on your show. We did notice, with the last 30 years, we've noticed a simultaneous decline in democracy, which kind of apexed in 1989 with the fall of the Berlin Wall. And then at the same time, a enormous erosion of trust in banking, which is kind of very obvious when you look at the joy with which people have sanctified the idea of decentralized finance and let's get rid of banking. And the question that we ask in the book is, is this simply a correlated trend, these two trends, or is there causality in it? And our view is that the one causes the other. This is kind of extreme version of capitalism propagated from the Harvard School of Business, all the way through the American system. You've got the Wall Street movie, Oliver Stone, almost celebrates greed is good.
Yeah.
And the consequence is that you have bad actors within the financial system that repeatedly and without sanction destroy trust. And you've got tax evasion, rising inequality, and then people don't trust the banks, and therefore they don't trust the financial system. But at the same time, they lose faith in democracy. So Hong Kong goes relatively unnoticed. South Sudan. I think, Simon, you might be aware that 17 missionaries were abducted in Haiti. And nothing's happened yet. $1 million they want per person. And in times of past, you know, Reagan sent troops into Panama to get Manuel Noriega. So we live in a very different time where people care less about democracy, and that's very worrying to me.
And in the book, I mean, you know, in some senses, it goes all the way. Nixon was perhaps a key start point, Bretton Woods, and the exiting of that, the gold standard. You mentioned the Berlin Wall. I remember I was a teen when that happened for me. I thought this was the beginning of the glory days, and it wasn't. You have to absolutely agree on that. And then, of course, just over a decade ago, 14 years ago, so the financial crisis of 08, 09, the phrase often, no bankers went to jail. But the flip side of that, of course, was the start of quantitative easing, which, well, now we sit 14 years later, and we're still quantitative easing. Jerome Powell's talking around tapering, but there is money just being pumped into a system, almost in a sense, to prop it up.
Yeah, to me, it's completely unbelievable. In 2004, the size of the Fed's balance sheet was $800 billion. Mm-hmm. And the size of the Fed's balance sheet as of today is $8.8 trillion, $9 trillion. So tapering is just a reduction in the number of bond purchases that take place, but you're still expanding the balance sheet. Whilst last night we had inflation at 7%, the highest in 40 years. So Jerome Powell is doing pretty much exactly the wrong thing, too slow, but he's working in a system that has 10 times more money than we had, you know, less than 20 years ago. So people ask, I wonder if Bitcoin is taking away from, you know, the gold market. No, not at all. Bitcoin is a new asset that's just added on top of a very overheated equity market. And the fact that commodities aren't also up, you know, is a blessing in disguise. I mean, we're having all the markets are very up. And I think the really bad thing about this is it was the lazy way out. Instead of building bridges, doing New Deal type stuff, you know, building dams and, you know, creating real economic benefit for 50 to 100 years, they just printed money and bought bonds. Yeah, and just never stopped.
As Chetan Shantor marks yesterday, when inflation was lost at these levels, 1982, interest rates in America were over 15%, which drives your point. I want to come to crypto in a moment. The other key point was China as a massive risk sitting on the sort of global horizon in a sense. And I suppose part of this is, how does it play out? A lot of the crypto fans will tell you, this is all going to collapse. It's going to crash, you know, sometimes before Easter, maybe before Christmas. My sense from the book is this is going to be a slow unraveling, and truthfully is happening.
Yes, I think it's been unraveling. We just haven't noticed since 2018. The start of it was the Hong Kong intervention.
Yeah.
The Chinese bank's balance sheets it's last we counted was $49 trillion. And that is, to put it in perspective, the U.S. bank balance sheet is $22 trillion, $21 trillion. And U.S. GDP is $20 trillion and Chinese GDP is $15 trillion. So no matter which way you look at it, Chinese banking assets to GDP, which is a very good metric to look at holistically, is way, way bigger than any large economy should ever be. And we know, for example, that China has made loans into Africa, like this recent Entebbe airport story where the loan is at a 2% rate, you know, completely non-economical. It hasn't priced risk and it hasn't priced credit risk. These loans aren't being paid back. And that's about $6 trillion of the $49 trillion goes to the Belt and Road Initiative. So as China's debt bubble bursts, because China is not a democratic country, which doesn't have free press, I don't think we're going to see a bigger kind of public explosion like we had with Lehman. And I think Evergrande's just the tip of the iceberg. I think it's going to be more like a long, slow burn, and you're going to see increasingly autocratic behavior, because the person on the ground in China is going to be suffering economically. And they've worked very hard. You know, they've worked very long, mm-hmm. long hours. And their children are not going to work those same hours. And you've got a declining working population because of the one-child policy. So in order to pay off their debt, just the interest-bearing part, they're going to have to grow at more than 6%. And we worked out that that means per person over the next 15 years, they'd have to grow at 10%, which is 10% increased productivity, which is impossible. So I do think that China is not a failed state. It's not a failing state. It's a slow burn with, unfortunately, a characteristic of autocracy.
Yeah, it's the slow puncture, to use an analogy. The one of the subtitles is The Fallacy of Cryptocurrency. You've mentioned crypto. A lot of my listeners out there are like, this is all perfect. Crypto steps into that space and solves this problem. I've never been convinced. You're certainly not convinced by that.
No, cryptocurrency is one of the silliest ideas in the history of human endeavor. I studied mathematics at university. So the actual cryptographic function, which is the kind of underlying technology that underlies it, is a particularly stupid idea, which is that you get computers to crunch through the factors of the prime factors to find the prime factors of 100-digit numbers. So you're just burning energy. That's called proof of work.
Yeah.
And the collaborative way is basically a completely trustless system in which you have thousands of people doing the same thing to authenticate each transaction. So if Bitcoin were to become a real currency, which you use to purchase goods on a daily basis, they would have to move away from proof of work. And aside from anything, it's philosophically, philosophically bad, because we're celebrating not having a central financial system. So it's the equivalent of not having a central medical system. You know, and a lot of people, you know, with COVID, haven't trusted the medical fraternity, and you've got the non-vaxxers. So you're always going to have tensions in a centralized system. But if we think of the police, for example, if we think of the emergency services, if we think of aircraft rules and regulations, mm-hmm. if we don't trust banking, the banking system, and we replace it with a completely trustless, inefficient system, which, by the way, Simon, as you know, most people don't even care about the decentralized finance part of it. They're just trading an asset that keeps going up.
Speculative, yeah.
Yeah, so for me, it's a silly idea. At best, it will become a regulated currency, at best. It will become fully regulated like any other part of the central system. At worst, it will crash.
And that's, I mean, you know, the whole idea of not having any oversight. I always say, well, that's fine, then we're living in Mad Max, and that's not a world we want to be living in. We're going to leave it there. That's David Buckham. He's CEO of Monocorp Solutions, but the book is The End of Money, Great Erosion of Trust in Banking, China's Minsky Moment, and the Fallacy of Cryptocurrency. Get yourself a copy, read it. It makes for some fascinating reading. David, really appreciate the time. And that's our poll today. David's very, talking around that decreasing trust in the global banking financial system. On our LinkedIn and Twitter, have your vote, have your say. Has your trust in the global financial system been eroding over the last decade or so?
We all have different investment needs. Some of us want to preserve our money for retirement, and others to create wealth for the next generation. At Stanlib, we have a team of investment specialists that can help you achieve any investment goal. So whether your money is looking for more certainty, more return, or more impact through your investments, we have a solution for your investment needs, no matter the time horizon. Join us over the next few months as we provide insights into the solutions we offer to meet your money needs. To find out more, visit stanlib.com or speak to your financial advisor. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. License number 719.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Quick Friday thought from me. The RSA Retail Savings Bonds, a great product for the right investor, someone looking for income, somebody looking to safely park some money, retirees and the like. Two changes that kept kicked in effective this month. The first is they removed the maximum that you could deposit. I don't think the maximum was much for many people. But the second one is perhaps the useful for some people, is that you can now receive interest monthly regardless of age. Previously, you had to be over 65 years old, but now anyone can request a monthly interest payment, or you can keep with the current biannual. That's it for today. Our poll yesterday, we chatted with Chantal Marks about that 9.3% move in NASPAS on Wednesday. And we asked, is that the start of the next leg higher? Almost half of you said, yep, absolutely. 40% said, no, China is still your concern. While the rest, a couple of percentage points, were saying, no, you only buy U.S. tech stocks. Have your vote, have your say on Twitter and LinkedIn. The show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. We're live every weekday morning. The MoneyWeb website's in the app, 6:30 a.m. Podcast available just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobokle, Nicole. Thanks to you for listening, my guests for their early mornings. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again Monday.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.